We want to welcome everybody to our regularly scheduled Sunday meeting of the United Lodge of Theosophists here in Philadelphia. We are just one of many lodges situated throughout the world, but even though we are independent students, we all are focused on one thing, and that is the spread broadcasting the idea of universal brotherhood. And this is an ancient idea, and it just fulfills all the needs that we have in this day and age. And we are devoted to this idea. And by being devoted to this one idea, we do not bring any outside issues into our meetings. You will find that all of our literature is all based on theosophical ideas, and these ideas are just way too, as it puts in our declaration, too absorbing and too lofty to leave it any room for studying anything else. I mean, you certainly are more than welcome on the outside to study, to believe whatever it is that you want. But here in our meetings, we focus as a group because the intensity of our thoughts and our emotions are such that it will help us to fulfill those needs that we have as spiritual beings. And it also says here, it holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching. So as such, we don't have any constitution, we have no bylaws, we don't have anybody who's a leader, because this is something that pulls us together under that umbrella idea of universal brotherhood. And it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be better able to teach and help others. Again, that whole idea of universal brotherhood. Now, in order for this lodge to perpetuate these ideas, we hold two meetings a week. We're here on Sunday. The doors open at 10:30. The meeting starts promptly at 11, and the meeting is over at noon. We have umbrella topics for each month. We are ending April's idea of the mysteries of the mind. And next week we are studying, the umbrella topic is psychism and spirituality. And the meeting topic for next Sunday is Buddha, the Light of Asia. On Wednesdays, we are studying In the Ocean of Theosophy by William Q. Judge. And the meeting runs from 7:30 until 8:30. The library is open from 5:15 until 7:15. It is a reference library. There's always a student available to help with any kind of special project you have in mind for research. And you can read and prepare for the Wednesday night class. This coming May 8th is White Lotus Day, which is a meditation type of meeting, and we will be honoring the life and work of H.P. Blavatsky. Our book table is open before and after each meeting. The price of the literature is only the cost of printing and shipping. We make no profit on it. We are financially sustained entirely by voluntary contributions, and our activities, you will only see volunteers up here on the platform, in the library, at the book table, the usher's table. We're all volunteers. We make no payment on that. And you can ask at the book table if there's anything you feel as though you want to volunteer for. So today we're looking at the last meeting in April, The Mysteries of the Mind, and the topic is the creative imagination and will. So we will start with a short talk on creative imagination, followed by a short talk on will, and there will be plenty time for questions and discussions.
Well, before we go into the subject matter, for those few that may be new, we just want to briefly bring up the idea of there is a permanent part of our nature and there's a temporary part of our nature. The permanent part is the real man, the spiritual soul within. And that is the idea of Atma, spirit, Buddhi, the container, shall we say, of all past knowledge, and Manas, or mind, the thinker. Then we have a part of our nature that most of us are so well acquainted with that we don't even acknowledge. It's temporary, it's matter, and within us, the first and highest is the passions and desires. Then we have the life energy. Then we have this physical body, and within that is the astral body, which all the real organs are within. So if we keep that in mind, that of our permanent nature and that of our temporary, we'll see where we have to leave this, because we are mind beings. We are thinkers. We use and take control, or try to take control, of those lower natures within us. And it says in the teachings, it explains the brain is, in its turn, an instrument for the mind, which in turn can be an instrument for the soul, which is the witness and the spectator within us. It is for the sake of that soul alone that the universe exists. So now we can get into this fabulous idea of imagination. We're going to do the theosophical idea of what imagination is, rather than the typical everyday knowledge that we know in the West of imagination dealing with fantasy and whatnot and light affair, because it is one of the plastic powers of our higher self, our higher soul. And within that imagination, there is a memory of all proceedings, lifetimes, and incarnations that we have had that is kept in that Buddhi quality. And it states it is a creative power which, when used in conjunction with our will, it can force not only a creative forces, but likewise their productions. So if we look at that in that condition, it would seem that in this lifetime, for the individual to try to express this idea of imagination, it can be of how it's been used in the past, in past lives. We could take the idea of something that appears could be new is really not new. Some have an easier time of imagining things than others do. The ancient teachings and the philosophy of theosophy does express the idea that the idea of concentration and meditation, if possible on a daily basis, can be a good help to us approaching the idea of imagination. And for most of us, as we read through, we understand we are image makers, yet most don't even know how to approach the use of it. We can talk about it, but very few can actually tell you in words how you would be able to use it. So it can be a formation or a reflection of an image. And that idea of the use of one-pointedness that comes in with the idea of concentration, of thought and imagination, can be very helpful. The trained imagination must have been trained either now, in this lifetime, or in some other lifetime before this, because we are all aware of the idea of precipitation, the idea of ideas that can come through the air and be put down onto paper. We know of these because of the structures that are within, and we know of these because of tests that have been done. Now, William Hugh Judge has said, when trained, imagination, it is the constructor in the human workshop, a most useful faculty with dynamic forces. So we're talking about powers and energy and forces that for most we're not aware that they are there, they can be trained, they can be a use to us, and as stated, it's not easy to approach it from the very beginning. So hopefully for most of us, if we've been returning life after life on this whole period of great evolution, the fact of the matter is maybe we have touched on it. It's all there to be had if we only knew how to approach it. And as we stated earlier, that idea of concentration and meditation on a daily basis can be very helpful to start training our lower temporary part of our nature to start following a routine. Will intelligently and desire blindly and unconsciously are absolute creators. So we have to understand in this whole idea of occult knowledge, it's hidden, but it's not hidden. It is available to us if we put the energy forth on it. And there is a lot that we can take in as far as this idea of image making. If we use it in the idea of not so much what it can do for myself in this one lifetime, but what could it make that it's a better place to live for everyone? And it seems that most of the things that have been invented, they've had imagination take a part in it. They've seen it, they see how it works, and they bring it forth. But when we know about these, most of the type of the things that were done were for the use of all and anyone that needed to know it. It can be a thing, it can be a situation, it can be books, it can be music, it can be art. They already saw it within their eyes and they could bring it forth. So for the common man, it is something to think about, because even in this one lifetime, can we honestly say that everything is just wonderful, pleasant, balanced? And yet we look around ourselves today and we don't see much harmony in the world between people, between countries, harmony even within a family. There's a lot of dissension. We need something to balance us, something to calm us. If we could use the idea of imagination for something that would be a help to all, it would make it better for the individual themselves. So this idea of, well, gee, just imagine, what if I won the lottery, what I would do? This is not what we're talking about. We're talking about something that can enhance, something that it can be everlasting, something that when trained and in control can be a help to all mankind. So this idea of being able to imagine things, imagine places, imagine workings of things in connection with our next subject coming up, would be a great help to all mankind on a universal level. So if we keep that in mind, that it's just one of those dynamic forces that we can tap with, and we will need and hear from the next part of our nature that can be a big help for the idea of imagination, creative imagination, and will.
So, as we said, the month's topic was mysteries of the mind, and theosophy looks much more closely than just the people out on the street when it comes to the idea of mind. And we heard that mind was one of the non-perishable non-perishable characteristics of man. And we look at mind this month, looking at it a very metaphysical principle. So what does it have to do with imagination and will, and how do these two things fit together then? So a definition of will in the dictionary is the faculty by which a person decides on and initiates action. Willpower is control or restraint deliberately exerted. And theosophy would also add that is a force of consciousness in action. So to go into it a little deeper in regards to will, it's interesting because Mr. Judge, in his preface to The Ocean of Theosophy, he says, the subject of will has received no treatment, inasmuch as that power of fact or faculty is hidden, subtle, undiscoverable as to essence, and only visible in effect. As it is absolutely colorless and varies in moral quality in accordance with the desire behind it, and we will comment on desire towards the end of this talk, with the desire behind it, as also it acts frequently without our knowledge, and as it operates in all kingdoms below man, there could be nothing gained by attempting to inquire into it apart from the spirit and the desire. So we can almost say that will just is. We can observe its effects, but we also have to look at the idea that it is an eternal principle. It is everlasting, and it's an ideation of from the eternal. So it's even cosmic in its scope, not just in man or the lower kingdoms, but cosmically as well. The great universal idea willed and the cosmos sprang into existence. The mysterious effects of attraction and repulsion are the unconscious agents of that will. And an example of this, we can look at magnets. They are not consciously attracted to each other, but there's an unconscious attraction that pulls them together. And then if you reverse, like with batteries, if you reverse them, they repulse each other. But man has a self-conscious effect on will. And it is, as we said, it is a power that is colorless, but it is colored by the way we affect it, either negatively or positively. Hence the phrase, behind will stands desire, because it is our desire that will color the will. And the higher the desire, the higher the effect on the will, and the lower the desire, meaning more towards the baser instincts, that will lower the will's effects as well. And we can't really, as was stated in the previous talk with imagination, you can kind of practice or work on your imagination to make it more effective. But with will, it just is. It is inherent in everybody to the same degree. But it's our desires that actually affect the will to make it, you know, either stronger or weaker. It flows from man's higher nature, but again, it's the will that will affect it. And we can almost lose identification with the will depending upon how high or low the desire is functioning. You know, whether from the spiritual it's working downward or is it working upward. And that is when will can take on a more negative idea. One of the things that does affect our functioning of will when it comes to how things will be affected by what we're willing to come into being is the whole idea of desire. Will truly cannot function on its own. It has to have this desire principle as its force, as its impetus. And the idea of fear cannot be overstated here, because if someone is so fearful that their desire is stymied, then the will cannot move forward to cause something to act. And we have to look at karma as well, as that affects desire, so it affects the will's action. So desire is actually the key to progress, and this is what we can actually work on in order to elevate the will, in order to elevate the reaction to what we're thinking about doing. And as was talked about with concentration and meditation, this is certainly something that we can use to help change the desires that we do have. Because as we said, as goes desires, as goes the will. It is mind as the basis for desire that initiates action on the various planes, and it is only through the mind that the effects of rest and action can be received. To make our will strong, we must have fewer desires, but let those few be high, pure, and altruistic, and will, as we said, is the vehicle for desire. So we will take your questions. Yes?
In listening to the description of how we can use the creative imagination and those universal sense, we thought of an example in our modern times of that of Martin Luther King's famous expression, "I have a dream," that dream being really a vision that he saw. And what's so amazing about it is, besides having that vision that inspired him, he could eloquently express it in a way that he could infect others with that same image and awaken the creative power of imagination within. So you really can see how one person with creative imagination can change the world. If we all have that ability.
Well, what's interesting, because you can see the complete opposite in regards to Hitler. I mean, we're looking at, you know, the lower desire as opposed to the higher desire, and moving the will, and they both were very creative, albeit both two very, very different, different ways. Their actions certainly were very, you know, opposite, polar opposites, but one can see how, if we're working from that lower desire principle, how it will affect and spread out. You know, they talk about, you know, taking a road less traveled, or, you know, it splits up and goes either way. So these two men, we can truly see how it's the desire principle that begins that whole process, depending upon where that principle is working from. Because imagination and will and desire, they're all one. I mean, they are each one idea, but it's either the higher or the lower function, the spin that humans put on them, that will determine the outcome, the action.
Yes, we in the back.
Are those ideas then perhaps the basis for the common phrase, "Be careful what you wish for"? Because it would seem that points to you will get it. And even if we don't believe we will get it, if we set imagination and will into motion, we are the co-creators with the universe. So is it that powerful? Are we actually able to create an outcome? Well, I guess it was explained in the
right. And historically, we could all think about situations where, yes, there are those that are called, people are referred to as, they're very strong-willed. Well, that has something to do with the magnetic pull, too, of pulling you in, and something that they could be exhuming from themselves that you have no idea what's going on, and you're pulled in by it. So you have to be able to know a right from wrong, a balance from non-balance. Is this a help to just one, or is this something everybody can use? These are the kind of questions we have to keep in mind. Follow-up?
Quick follow-up, yeah. If we are unaware of what we're doing, are we still responsible for it?
Well, we wanted to respond to the first part of the question, because karma will also determine whether we get what we ask for. Mm-hmm. So we think to a degree we can make our outcomes. We can, because we know there's so many people that have pulled themselves up from living in dire poverty and have become very successful, have become very altruistic. But karma also has a lot to do with the way this person's life turned out. But, I mean, there's that whole idea of free will, which is a whole nother topic here that we can certainly discuss. But what was the second part?
Responsibility.
Oh, well, yes, you're still responsible. I mean, your mind, you know, if you're not aware of what you're doing, that doesn't give you an out, because you have made that decision still to go ahead and do whatever it is that you were doing. Yes.
But isn't the world in which we live presently a product of our will and imagination, so that everything that we experience has been created by man?
Mm-hmm.
Sure, we see all the heartbreak and suffering, but there is also that other aspect where the imagination and will have, you can see it flourishing by trying to make us more in harmony with nature rather than destroying it. I mean, of course, in the world in which we live, there's always the opposites that exist.
Mm-hmm.
So even though we see the suffering, doesn't our will and imagination need to concentrate on that which is harmonious and helpful to humanity, rather than getting our heads stuck in what's bad or what's not helpful?
What's that phrase, need to work in the solution, not the problem? Is that
be part of the solution,
not the problem? And we think that that's exactly what the comment was about, because we can, and sometimes the issues that are going on in the world just seem so totally overwhelming, and we think, what can one person do? Well, one person can do one thing. One person can affect what's happening in their wherever they are, whether it be in the store, with your family, with your neighbors. There is something that we can do. And, you know, we do need to know that there is good and bad in the world. And we can see that there's a lot of, we speak of imagination, like the medical developments that are going on to help not only humans, but animals as well. We saw the other day an elephant with an artificial leg, and it was just the most magnificent thing to see this elephant walking around with an artificial leg on. And so there are people out there that are working in a very quiet manner, not being blasted all over the news. But luckily, somebody out there was able to identify that there was this person with an imagination who is working to help others. And they're letting those of us know that there are good things, because we only hear about the bad.
Hmm.
In the back?
There's a little story from India that we use our desire, imagination, and will because we want something so badly. For instance, we're very weak, and we use all of that mental focus to become strong. And then in our next life, we are strong. Only, unfortunately, we're a slave.
Yeah.
So it isn't just that power. It's the discrimination to know how and when to use it and what we should be using it for. As you said, for helping life, for helping animals, for helping the world around us, and not focused on ourselves.
Yes.
To follow up then on the previous three comments. Plato said that ideas rule the world. So it would seem then that if ideas rule the world, then it is will and imagination that can be the servants of those ideas. So if we want to make practical changes really in the world, what is a few basic ideas that we need to keep our imagination and desire focused on?
On a broad scope, keep it off of ourselves for self-advancement. it maybe on a more altruistic way of using it, ways of helping, as stated, the idea, what we have done to quote Mother Nature. And it seems like when we were youngsters, we never questioned anything about what was going on, because it's been going on a long time. And now it's almost, you wonder, are we too late? Have we started too late? Is it going to be a scope that's not just here in the West, but in the East? Is the whole world going to wake up to what we're doing just to nature in itself? And yet before, it used to be, you know, it was like our footrest. You know, it's just here for us and us alone to do what we need, not thinking of the altruistic idea of all that nature gives us, what do we give in return? That's just one idea.
Well, in reference to the last comment, I think all world religions, all peoples, hold to one idea. Mm-hmm. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And it's the basis of morality. Now, in terms of imagination, our world is so materialistic so that we think our imagination is going to Disney World. And no, well, it's true, because many children, this is where their imagination is focused. And one of the examples that Theosophy gives us is to imagine a master. Imagine a perfected being. But imagine them dwelling within us, and how would we act? How would we emulate that understanding? So that imagination and willpower elevates us into another sphere that we're no, you know, we are stuck here in this material world, but our minds can go anywhere.
Oh, we're trying to remember, there was a, during World War II, there was a psychiatrist, I'm sure somebody remembers what this gentleman's name is. He was a prisoner.
Eric Fromm?
Who?
Fromm?
Viktor Frankl.
Viktor Frankl.
Thank you. And he said that, and he actually made this part of his therapy when the war was over, that as long as somebody was able to concentrate on something positive, that they had something positive to live for, no matter what it was, but that they kept their imagination focused on that, that those were the ones that were able to make it out of the camps. So this is like a perfect example of what we can do. You know, when we talk about ideas ruling the world, this is, you know, as long as we're focused, and if it's a higher nature, if the idea is of a higher nature, then, you know, that will help us in our evolution, because if it's a higher nature and we consistently think of it that way, we are becoming closer to that, the spirit within us then.
It is a spiritual quality that if we can envision what could be in that level, it is truly coming from the true spirit within us, within everyone. Yes, way in back.
And we've heard so many common phrases this morning, and we have one more, but we think they're there as reminders to us. And what comes to mind from the previous speaker was, think globally and act locally. When we were children, recycling wasn't even a word in our vocabulary. Today, we have made it a habit, hopefully, to
Boy, it's funny, right comes in my mind with a definite negative, was Manson and all those women and all that killing. And it, what kind of people are drawn to it, that was very earth-shattering when it all happened. I mean, it was such, on such a large scale. But now I'm sure we can all think of a positive way that idea of a lot of minds thinking in the same direction. Yes.
Well, I think most of us come here so that our minds are working together. And it's for the highest that we can imagine, because, you know, out there, it's very difficult because of the mindset that has evolved over generations and generations of an outside God, vicarious atonement, you know, a one life kind of thing. But here, we speak of the truth, and the truth will set us free. And the fact that we come here is not so much for us, but to keep these ideas alive, and that we have no idea who we touch or who we impress by a simple statement or just being present and not being upset when other people are upset. We think that the most positive thing that we can do as a human being is try to elevate the race mind. And I know of no other way that I can do that but through the effort of other people thinking and talking about the same thing and using their will and imagination to expand that understanding.
And speaking with other people of like minds, we can encourage each other, and if maybe we just needed a little explanation about something that we weren't sure about, so then our desire can be rejuvenated in essence, so that then the whole thing opens up with will and then imagination. And we think as a group we can, we were talking about Kama, and if it's a lower idea, and it can still affect people of those like minds, but coming to the meetings, we are like a little beacon here in the middle of the city. There's all this positive energy coming out of this building, and we often wonder, like, how close did this building come to being burnt down? And it's managing to stay up, and we think, the impressions that have been made here over the years, like we said, it's like this little beacon, in the middle of the city. Yes.
Right. Well, when we brought up Kama, we weren't bringing up Kama, the lower use of it, but Kama as a principle, creative desire. That's what Kama is. So we're thinking, so theosophical ideas always are, whether there are people who are using them or not. But like, if we think of Mr. Crosby and the original seven, it's not just a matter of having the ideas, mm-hmm. it's actually moving them, and it takes Kama, imagination, desire, imagination, and will to make something happen with those ideas, because if there was too many theosophists not making something happen or making the wrong thing happen with those ideas. So we were wondering, is it the synthesis, it's not just mind, but is it a synthesis of desire to move this, and will it have a greater effect if there's a common desire?
And we wonder, karma affecting, there are so many people that have an idea that want to move it forward, and they have the impetus and they have that desire to do it, but they're checked by karma. And specifically with Mr. Crosby, it's obvious he had the masters, to help him along to get this whole thing moving to save it. But in regards to other ideas, there are so many companies out there that are doing good that, you know, these people started from nothing and were able to work their way up and promote these wonderful ideas. So, you know, and attracting people along the way. So, you know, we think karma has a lot to do with the effects and the movement of these ideas. And one can certainly, you know, there's the desire is definitely affected by karma and what you can do.
Mm-hmm. Well, as far as some people have mentioned that have wrecked a lot of havoc in the world, certainly, but and we could mention many others, but we won't. Anyway, the point is, though, that yes, there's this will, but these individuals have enabled, these demagogues and these cult leaders have managed to take advantage of the passivity of people. So what do we talk about? I mean, we, in Theosophy, we talk about imagination, will, but also concentration and meditation. So really, and we were talking about recycling earlier, and we're certainly trying to recycle the theosophical ideas in this world, which are as old as the world is, actually predate the world, because these ideas are timeless. So, but we have to really be on guard for passivity, mm-hmm. because that's really what allows that will, you know, good and bad, it can work either way. But unfortunately, in the last century, we've seen, you know, constant war and persecution and pollution and you name it, but we think it's passivity is what has allowed that to take root.
And also we have to keep in mind, we live in a world of law, of cycles. Things come back and come back and come back. We can color a cycle one way or another, but the fact that it seems there's always going to be those opposites, we have to learn to use the expression, walk the middle path. Be able to observe something, and then we have to weigh it with what knowledge we have. Is this for the betterment of all, or is this for just one or two group or people? That should give us an idea, because what's happening in the world, whether it's here or it's in the Middle East or in the Far East, there is a connection there. So it's up to each individual to be their own sounding board for information that's coming into us. And that idea of concentration and meditation, it's giving us some sort of thing to balance us, to help us question and not just follow the crowds. That's a very good idea.
If we could go back to a previous question, comment regarding the focusing of desire, can it achieve great things? In your presentation of the declaration, it was mentioned that we don't take part in side issues. Not that they're not important, but we don't take part in that. And also in the talk, the idea is if you want to arouse the highest creative will, spiritual will, you have to keep your desires few and high. Taking those two ideas together, we're only a few people relative, but the influence generated, not only in this city, but through that microphone up there and the iPod connections around the world, can generate a lot of spiritual force don't diffuse the desire to take part in side issues while in the meeting. So we think that's a practical example
yeah,
of how a one-pointed desire can have a tremendous magnitude of effect.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we don't want to water things down and get sidetracked. So we think it's an excellent idea that we follow here, not to bring in side issues. Yes?
One of the listeners to our Sunday meetings in England has started publishing both an online and physical magazine called Firefly, and it is full of theosophical ideas for beginners, and he often mentions his gratitude to the Philadelphia ULT for their podcast. But in the earlier remark about passivity, we wanted to say one of the problems in the world is the passivity of good people. They hear about something, they feel it, they imagine being able to do something to help, and for one reason or another, they do nothing. And that is the way that negativity, evil, prejudice, cruelty, all those things can build so easily because good people selfishly do nothing to stop it.
We're in the age of the Kali Yuga, which is the dark age, and very materialistic. And if these people, these good people, were able to manage through, and then they could be checked by karma too. I mean, karma is involved with everything. Then, because they say in Kali Yuga, we can make so much quicker and larger gains than if we were in the other. Things move faster in Kali Yuga for us in regards to evolution. But there's that draw, that negative draw, that materialistic just kind of, because that's what's causing all the heartache now anyway, is the whole idea of materialism.
In reference to this passivity idea, imagination has a dark side, and the dark side is fantasy, daydreaming, just unfocused imagination, and that leads a lot of people into this state of passivity. But on the other, now, and one other point.
we are not dictated as to what we do when we leave, but when we speak of universal brotherhood, putting that into practice, you know, exemplification of those principles, you know, it's up to each individual as to how they will put forth, you know, their contribution to universal brotherhood.
To go back to the previous idea about the passivity of good people, and to follow up on that regarding we live in the Kali Yuga. So it's not only the evil intentions of some, but the whole wave of the past materialism is upon us now. It reminds us of those retaining walls in New Orleans and in certain areas of Europe that hold back the storms. It's only what was necessary is the activity, the forcefulness of a few good people. It doesn't have to be all the good people. Judge said that if I had 500 true theosophists, I could change the world. Just a few people can be that guardian wall. You good people that are willful, that holds back, that checks the evil that could occur in the world. Not completely eliminated, of course, but checks a lot of it.
That's good. We would like to close with a few words about a hint of what maybe we could imagine and keep in mind. The words will probably be very familiar to you. Imagine there's no countries. It isn't hard to do. Nothing to kill or to die for, and no religion, too. Imagine all the people living life in peace. You may say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. I hope someday you'll join us and the world will be as one. Imagine no possessions. I wonder if you can. No need for greed or hunger. A brotherhood of man. Imagine all the people sharing all the world. We can thank John Lennon for that. A good way to use imagination.
Hey, our meeting's over.
Ha 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 ha.